I'm available to start at right tackle.
You can't see when I have clothes on.
Right. Well, there's not an even playing field. There's never been an even playing field. There never will be an even playing field.
But... What shampoo do you use on your hair?
You don't need to be Superman to play in this offense.
You're listening to The Red Zone.
Welcome, Badgers fans, to another episode of The Red Zone. We're doing our mailbag podcast today. I already got your questions from you. If you want to listen to our podcast from earlier in the week with my good friend and BYU fan Brendan Kingsford and also Badgers center Tyler Biotic, you can go on iTunes or Google Play or Madison.com to hear that one. But today we're doing a mailbag, and I'm going to go ahead and get started here since we got quite a few questions to get through. See, the first one is from Stormrider at Stormrider55. He asks, what will the Badgers do to get off to a quick start this week? Yeah, that's a good question. You know, I do think they're going to start a little bit quicker than last week. I don't expect them to be, you know, down late in the second quarter or early in the second half. But I think they want to do what they've really been doing. They just have to clean up their mistakes. You know, I don't like when you take last game for example. They really ran the ball well throughout the entirety of the game. It was just a matter of a couple miscues. You know, Jonathan Taylor's fumble really hurt them in the red zone. The interception at the beginning of the third quarter hurt. They had, the drop pass by A.J. Taylor, right near the goal line that led to 3 points instead of seven. They just had some miscues like that I think would have made the game look a lot better, would have made the start look a lot more clean if those hadn't happened. So I think they really just want to focus on kind of cleaning up those mistakes. I mean, they really want Jonathan Taylor to be able to hold on to the football. Obviously, he's got two fumbles in two games now after struggling with that last year. And of course, Hornibrook has spent a lot of time this offseason trying to cut down on his interceptions. So I think they just want to take care of the ball, and they do want to establish the run early. You know, it's not a team that's going to suddenly change what they do, and just because they've had a slow start or two, they're going to come out here and, you know, try something completely different and try to have Hornibrook throw the ball 40 or 50 times. It's just not going to happen. So, you know, I think you can kind of dig yourself into more of a hole if you try to do something like that and go away from what you're good at. So I think they're still going to just try to establish the running game the best that they can, use that to set up their play action like they usually do, and then, you know, just make sure those mistakes are few and far between. And I think if they do that and they don't turn the ball over and they don't make those mistakes, then they can get off to a little bit better start this week. Although BYU is tougher competition, I think, than these first couple opponents. So I think they want to get that fast start so they don't have to try to dig themselves out of another hole before, you know, against a little bit better team. Let's see. Jeremy Winokur at J. Winokur. He asks, how much will Danny Davis play this game versus BYU? You know, Davis has been practicing throughout his entire suspension. You know, he was with the team doing pretty much everything except for playing in the games, from my understanding. So I don't expect him to be limited at all here. You know, this isn't like somebody coming back from an injury where you have to work them in slowly. Like I said, he has been practicing, so he's not behind in that department or with what Wisconsin's wanting to do. So I just don't see, you know, and I just don't see him playing any less snaps than he would in a normal game here. You know, Paul Chris said on Monday that the suspension has been served. You know, that they thought two games was enough of a punishment. So I don't think they're going to, you know, limit his snaps to kind of extend his punishment for his involvement in the alleged sexual assault or anything like that. You know, I think that the two games was what he was suspended for. Now that that's up, he's back as, you know, as good as he was before. So I don't expect him to be limited at all. It's going to be interesting to see kind of, you know, how exactly the playing time and the snap and the target share is split up between those top three receivers with Davis and A.J. Taylor and Kendrick Pryor, because Taylor's got off to such a hot start that maybe they're going to try to target him a little bit more. You know, I wrote about A.J. Taylor earlier this week in our weekly film room on Madison.com, and you can go check that out if you want. But, you know, just talking about how good he's been as a deep threat this year, and I think they may try to continue to take advantage of that with Taylor. But it'll be interesting to see if some of those targets, you know, go to Davis and how many of them do. Because I think Davis is going to be able to walk right in and make a huge impact. But it's going to be interesting to see between those top three guys exactly how much Hornibrook targets each of them and how many snaps each of those guys gets. Let's see, Ryder Cup captain at Cup Captain. He asks, okay, this is a long one. He asks, oh, Wisconsin's run-at-all-cost offense netted a total of 17 points in the last six quarters of their last two Big Ten championship games and only 17 points in 2017 versus Michigan. Against Miami in the Orange Bowl, the passing game ignited the offense against a good Miami defense. With a fourth-year quarterback and an above-average receiving core, why won't the head coach utilize the pass more on first and second down, especially with teams stacking the box? He puts Hornibrook in third-down situations that only Aaron Rodgers can overcome. And given Hornibrook's high football IQ and work ethic, why doesn't Paul Chryst give him the opportunity to audible more often? Okay, there's a lot to unpack here. You know, I kind of like I mentioned earlier, I don't think Wisconsin really wants to go away from their identity. You know, I think even when you look at that Miami game, you know, if I can't remember exactly how the game played out, but from my understanding, if I remember correctly, they did fall behind a little early, and they were trying to establish the running game, and I think that what they did early on set up a lot of that passing game. You know, they've had certain games throughout the years where their passing game has gotten going, but I think I don't think they want to go out there and just from the very start just pass, and like I said, have Hornibrook throw 40 or 50 times, because that's just not always going to work. You know, if you know, maybe you catch a team off guard because that's not what you normally do in the first couple of possessions, but I guess you're asking why are they a lot more unpredictable on offense, and I think maybe that you could probably, after looking at that last game especially, you could make that argument. I mean, they passed the ball only 11 times against New Mexico, and there are certain games throughout the years that maybe some people, you know, would like to see Wisconsin, you know, open up the offense a little bit more in the passing game. But I don't think there's really anything wrong with what they're doing. You know, I think that, look, they have an awesome running game. They have a Heisman candidate at running back. They have an offensive line that has multiple All-Americans on it and, you know, is possibly one of the best in school history. I think it's what they've done successfully over a number of years. Now, I do think that they probably pass on first and second down more than people who complain about it think that they do. I definitely think that, you know, in these later games, when you get into games against, you know, say the Iowa game next week or Penn State and Michigan, I do think that, you know, take the Michigan State game in 2016 as an example. I think there are certain games where you can look back and see that Hornibrook, they trusted him to throw on first down, and there were certain games where that made more sense to do it. And you know, it's always hard to kind of follow a team's, you know, play calling and figure out exactly what their strategy is for that specific game. But I don't necessarily think this is an offense that just goes out there and does run on first down, run on second down, pass on third down, and then punt if it doesn't work. I think there's a little bit more to it. Now, last game against New Mexico, that was kind of what we saw, but I also think that that's because the running game was working really well. You know, like I mentioned earlier, you know, I mean, Jonathan, they ran for 417 yards, the most in the Paul Chryst era, and although they started slow, it was more because of those turnovers and sort of the few miscues here and there, and the running game ended up breaking open in the second half, and that was that, and they scored, what was it, 45 points by passing the ball 11 times. So I know it's going to be different, and you're talking about games against, you know, the Michigans, Ohio States, Penn States of the world. And look, I mean, those teams are going to be difficult to beat anyway. I mean, I don't think you can go out there against Ohio State last year and just start throwing the ball every down and think that it's going to work. I mean, I like Alex Hornibrook, you know, as much as the next guy, and I think he's probably better than some fans give him credit for. But, you know, I just think there's a little bit more nuance to it than maybe it appears at times. You know, I don't think it's, you know, when they run on first and second down and it doesn't really work, and then Hornibrook's in a third and eight or third and nine situation, you know, yeah, in hindsight you say, well, you know, that's not what you want. Obviously, you don't want to put Hornibrook in those situations. But I think if you really go back and break down kind of what this team has done, maybe that'd be an interesting exercise too. I mean, if I have time at maybe some point in the offseason, to kind of go back in some of these games and try to track, you know, sort of the percentage of times that they do throw on first down or in certain down and distance situations. But I don't think it's as simple as, you know, that you call it a run at all cost offense. I don't know if that's necessarily what it is. I think there are times where, where Chris has trusted Hornibrook to do a little bit more. And I think it just depends on the particular matchup and the particular opponent you're playing. And like you said, when you play teams like Michigan and Penn State and Ohio State, those teams are going to, you know, a team with a really great defense is going to be hard to move the ball on, regardless, whether you're a run-first offense or a pass-first offense. So I think when you say, well, they only scored, you know, 17 points and against this great defense, you know, that's, I don't think that's necessarily just because they're trying to run the ball. Okay, let's move on to SMG at Sean Geary 4. He asks, if/when Bradrick Shaw comes back this season, how do you see him fitting into the Badgers running game? That's a good question, because I think, you know, before the season, I did an over-unders podcast with Jesse Temple from The Athletic, and one of my questions was, one of my over-unders for us to kind of go over was whether the number two running back on the team would get over or under 500 yards rushing. And he went over, saying the Taiwan deal was going to be over 500, and I went slightly under, because I thought that, you know, I just kind of thought Shaw would eventually come back and maybe take some of those carries from Deal, and neither of those guys would really reach that mark, and Chris James and Garrett Groshek would be used more in passing down situations, and they wouldn't quite reach it either. But I think the more this I watch these first couple games, I think Taiwan Deal's been impressive enough to where it might be a little bit difficult for Shaw to break into the rotation here. You know, there's only so many running backs that you can play in a game. I think when you're getting past the, you know, more than four, it becomes really difficult. You know, right now they have, you know, Jonathan Taylor and Taiwan Deal on early downs, and then they have Garrett Groshek and Chris James kind of taking a lot of the passing down work, and working Shaw into that mix is going to be difficult. And I think if he does work in, it's going to be because he takes some of Taiwan Deal's carries. But if Deal continues to play well, like he has these first two games, it may be difficult for Shaw to play much of a role this season. So I think we have to kind of wait and see on that one. You know, he's still out as of right now, and you know, they said, and during fall camp, John Settle said that kind of Big Ten play was their target point for Shaw. You know, that's next week, so we'll see if they meet that, or if he comes back at least after the bye week, or at least relatively soon. And that is something I'm really interested in, to see if he can work in the rotation, and if he does, whose workload goes down. You know, does he split, you know, second team early down work with Taiwan Deal, or is he able to pass up Taiwan Deal, or does he just struggle to get into the rotation? So that's going to be interesting to see. And coming off a major injury like he had, there is certainly a chance that Shaw isn't really able to make much of an impact throughout this entire season. New York Islanders fans at NY fans. He asks, what are the chances that Quintez Cephas returns to the team this season? Pretty much zero. You know, his trial is, you know, probably not even going to really start until next year. So I can't see, it's hard to see a path right now, after this week when a judge ordered the trial to go on. It's hard to see a path that Quintez Cephas could possibly return this season. I think if you're a Wisconsin fan, you know, maybe you just hope that he's back at any point over his entire career. So like someone asked in a previous mailbag, this actually would be a redshirt year for him. You know, if he goes to trial and is ultimately found innocent, you know, this year he would actually not lose the eligibility this year because he's not redshirted yet. So he could still be a redshirt junior next year, but I think that's kind of the least of his concerns right now. You know, he's facing trial. He's on trial for two felony counts of sexual assault. So, I mean, at this point, you definitely should not expect him back at least this season, if not ever. So it's going to be a long drawn out situation. So don't get your hopes up on that one. Let's see. Gugu Muck at Hanzo_steel. He asked, did Coach Chris call Coach Wilcox this week, or does tape give all your team needs? I think people on the coaching staff definitely called Justin Wilcox. You know, I think maybe, I'm not sure if Coach Chris did or not. You know, I mean, Wilcox is, I guess, more of a defensive guy. Chris is more of an offensive guy. So Chris may be looking more at BYU's defense, where Wilcox might have been, you know, looking a little bit more at BYU's offense during last week before they played Cal. But, you know, I think, you know, if I wouldn't be surprised at all if Jim Leonard called Justin Wilcox, or if some of the other defensive assistants did, to kind of get their take. You know, that happens all the time in the, you know, in the coaching world. I think these guys call each other a lot in situations like this where they're playing a team where somebody they have a good relationship with, you know, just played, and I think they kind of bounce ideas off of each other. I think that's really common. So, yeah, I mean, obviously they're watching a ton of tape this week, and they're going to get most of what they need to know from that. But I think some people are definitely calling Justin Wilcox this week. See, Andrew Fraser at AFraser87 asks, with Brown, Wiedig, Nelson, and hopefully Benhart, does someone move inside, or will they target interior offensive linemen? You know, it's always hard to project this. I think there's definitely a chance, you know, one of their, you know, big time tackle recruits ends up on the interior. But I also think they have less depth at tackle now than they do on the interior. Now, that obviously by the time these guys all get here and are ready to play, maybe that will change. Maybe those interior guys will all be gone. But I definitely think they'll probably, you know, look for interior offensive linemen down the road as well. But I also think that, you know, a lot of these guys, you know, usually you're not really sure exactly how somebody's body is going to develop when the guy is 16 or 17 years old and a high school junior. So I think you kind of have to wait and see. You know, you just don't know how guys are going to develop. You know, one of these guys could end up becoming more of a, turning into more of a, you know, a guard or center body type. And you just kind of have to wait and see. You know, I mean, I think if they're able to get all the, you know, if they're able to get all these guys and keep all these guys, then I definitely think they'll probably, yeah, they could turn their attention toward the interior, but I also think that, you know, you kind of have to wait and see how these guys develop too. So it's a little too early to tell right now how that's going to play out. But, you know, at least right now, when you look at the Badgers roster, it seems like they do have, you know, a lot more depth and maybe some more young guys too that are, you know, that are really suited to play the interior already. So I think they're going to be okay. Let's see. Kevin Windlant at KDUB5757 asks, how much do you think off-the-field issues will affect the team this year in terms of their success? You know, I don't think it will affect it too much. You know, well, let's take it one by one. You know, if you took a look at the Dante Kerr-Williams departure first, which I guess that's not really an off-the-field issue, but one of your top cornerbacks leaves to transfer, that's definitely could have an effect. But it seems like the cornerback group has played pretty well these first couple games. Obviously, the big one is Quintez Cephas and Danny Davis and their situation, which we already touched on earlier. But, you know, I think from that situation, you know, Davis is returning this week, and you have to think that maybe that's not going to be a distraction once he gets into the flow of the game and he's not having to sit games out anymore. You know, the Cephas thing, I think it seems like players have moved on from that. You know, it's always going to be a strange situation when you have a teammate like that going through that type of situation. But I think this team has done a pretty good job in the past from moving on from distractions. Now, this is kind of a different thing than they've ever experienced, but I also think that it doesn't seem to have affected them so far. And I don't necessarily think, you know, they have, just from an on the field perspective, Davis is coming back this week and they have enough depth at wide receiver where Cephas's absence, obviously he might have been their best guy, so you know you don't want to undersell that. Like, that's a big loss, but I think with Davis, Taylor, and Pryor there, that's not really going to, they have plenty of depth at wide receiver where the Cephas loss isn't gonna kill them by any means. And I think the cornerbacks, like I said, have looked really good these first couple games without Dante Kerr-Williams, and it's gonna be really interesting to see when they get into the tougher competition, when they play, you know, get into Big Ten play and start playing better talent. You know, does that hold up, and are these guys gonna be able to be consistent? You know, Caesar Williams and Fayon Hicks got praise for their consistency throughout fall camp, and so if they can keep that going and play well once they get into Big Ten play, that's going to be a big help for this defense. Ben Tannenbaum at MadDog7493 asks, will Henningsen still get reps now that Laudermilk is officially healthy and first team? Yeah, I do still think Henningsen will get reps now. You know, I highlighted after the first game, you know, just how thin the defensive line was. You know, they stuck with just three defensive linemen for almost the entirety of three quarters, and that was kind of a surprise. And, you know, Jim Leonard said that these guys have to earn those reps. You know, that they have to, these guys that aren't playing much, you know, we're not going to force it here, even though, you know, our starters might be getting fatigued. You know, these guys have to earn those reps. But I think Henningsen is a guy that has earned reps regardless of whether Laudermilk's in there. I do think that, you know, Laudermilk's going to step in there and start and play a lot of snaps this game against BYU and beyond. But I don't think they want to go into another game like that first game where they only have three defensive linemen. You know, I think that Henningsen has played well enough to earn some reps. How many is going to be interesting to see. You know, I don't know if they're still going to try to ride those top three guys with Laudermilk, Sangapolu, and Caden Lyles, or if Henningsen will really work in there a lot and get close to the number of reps that Lyles does. It's something interesting to watch this week. It may depend on the opponent, too. If you're playing a spread team that likes to pass the ball a lot, you might be in nickel packages a lot, and you're going to stick with Laudermilk and Sangapolu on a lot of those snaps, and then work Lyles in there, and maybe there's not quite as many snaps for Henningsen, but I think he's definitely going to play a role the rest of the season as their number three defensive end. I don't think, you know, you need to worry about Henningsen hitting the bench and not seeing him again this season. See, last one here from Jesse at SD Badger Fanatic. He asks, assuming that the offense and team keeps continuing success, and in the light of Rudolph's recruiting an offensive line, who do you see as his successor if he leaves to become a head coach? You know, I think if you're looking for an in-house candidate, I think Ted Gilmore might be a really good candidate. You know, he's a guy that has been sort of a recruiting star for Wisconsin for a while now, and seems like he's done a really great job with the receivers. So I think, you know, he's a guy that you're going to want to hold on to, and maybe if Rudolph didn't leave after another season, rewarding him with a promotion to offensive coordinator might be a good thing. And for someone like Gilmore, I'm not sure if he's, you know, used to calling plays or anything like that, but I think, you know, Paul Chryst can obviously ease him into that. You know, Chryst already calls, you know, a lot of the plays right now. So I think when you have a guy like Chryst as head coach, it makes it a little bit easier transition for maybe a position coach going to an offensive coordinator role at a program like this. You know, if you're looking at outside the program, you know, it's really hard to predict these things. You know, there's so many relationships that Chryst or some of the other guys on the staff could have. You know, usually a lot of these come out of left field. Like, we didn't see the Bobby April, you know, hire coming at all at outside linebacker. So it's really hard to predict that. You know, I think what would be interesting if Paul hired his brother, Jeep Chryst. I think that would be a really interesting story. I don't know if that's actually going to happen, but he's the tight ends coach for the Denver Broncos right now. He's a couple of decades removed from much college experience, but he's been a position coach in the NFL for a long time, and I think was the offensive coordinator of the 49ers a few years ago for one season. So that would be an interesting hire too. But as far as just getting a list of candidates, that's always really difficult. But I think Gilmore would be in the running if Rudolph did ultimately move on. All right. That's it. Thanks for all your questions this week. If you didn't get time to send me a question, we are also going to do a live chat after Saturday's BYU game. So follow me on Twitter at Jason_Galloway to get an update on that on Saturday night. And you can also subscribe to the Red Zone Podcast if you haven't already on iTunes or Google Play. And keep visiting Madison.com for all of your Badgers football coverage. Thanks for listening.